And welcome to the Rick House. My name is Cyrus Farmer, and you are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. Folks, we have a big show for you tonight. We're going to be talking about week one of the NFL, and boy, what a bang to the season. Wow, a lot of good games, a lot of interesting topics, a lot of things that happened that I thought were really, really of note. So we're going to be getting all into that this entire episode. But first, I do want to talk about one thing that's been on my mind, and now is the time to talk about it. Who you got in the Crawford-Canelo fight coming up this Saturday on Netflix? I mean, I have to be honest, I know everyone and their mother thinks Canelo is probably going to win, Canelo's favorite, because Crawford is jumping up so many weight classes. I just got a funny feeling Bud Crawford is actually going to win that fight. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing that. I mean, my job one for the Canelo-Crawford fight is just to be able to stay awake long enough for the fight to begin and to be able to make it through the entire fight. I'm sure it's going to be on. They're probably not even going to open that thing until, 12:30 midnight, give or take. But it is what it is. It's going to be one of the biggest fights in years. So I will be there taking it all in, there being watching on TV here at home in the Philadelphia area. I will be watching that, and I will give you my thoughts on that next week. So let's talk about Canelo Crawford next week. Now, on to the NFL. Folks, week one just had so many different storylines, so many interesting things happen throughout the course of the opening week. Let's start at the beginning with the world champion, Philadelphia Eagles, taking on the Dallas Cowboys. And folks, let's be absolutely honest. Jalen Carter, obviously, was wrong to spit on Dak Prescott. I don't care what started it. I don't care what you thought was happening. You should never spit on another man or another person. I mean, just something you shouldn't do. He deserved the fine that he got. He deserved to be ejected. But there's a couple things that we have to take into consideration. Now, Jalen Carter, if you know Jalen Carter at all and his history, I know there was the tragic speed racing accident when he was a Georgia drag racing accident. And also, you know, he's run a little hot here in Philadelphia as well. So he's a guy who just runs hot sometimes. It doesn't take much to wind Jalen Carter up. That being said, he deserved to be ejected, and the fine was appropriate. I don't know. I feel like Jalen Carter, maybe it's immaturity. Maybe it's who he is. Maybe this kind of incident will keep him from hurting himself and the team in the future. Maybe it won't. Who knows? It's too early to tell. He's a young player. He's got all the talent in the world. The team needs him desperately, not only to play, but to play well. And he's capable of doing both. But I have to be absolutely honest here. Jalen Carter needs a bodyguard. What do I mean when I say Jalen Carter needs a bodyguard? Well, I'll tell you. If you look at the tape, Jalen Carter kind of drifts away from the Eagles defensive huddle towards the Dallas offensive huddle, kind of drifts away by himself. Dak does his thing. And then Jalen ends up going nose to nose with Dak Prescott pre-spitting. And there is not a single Eagle in sight in the picture. At all. They're all back in the huddle, or they're all back in the huddle watching. You can't allow that to happen. It is a very young defense. Zach Bond is the oldest member of the starting defense. And I think Zach is like 28, 29 years old. All right? So Zach has to take it upon himself to essentially be Jalen Carter's shadow from now on. From now until he matures, or if he doesn't mature, till now until the end of his career, you cannot let Jalen Carter be anywhere by himself as soon as he leaves the locker room, because someone has to be there to pull him back or to keep him from doing something dumb. Look, it's just kind of the way it is. I like Jalen Carter a lot as a player. What's not to like? He's tremendous. But you have to have somebody by him to make sure that he doesn't hurt himself and the team like he did in week one against the Cowboys. That situation did not have to happen. If you have somebody right there with Jalen who can talk him down, or if necessary, physically restrain him from going crazy on Dak Prescott and spitting on him, do it. And that is the new assignment for Zach Bond from now until the end of his time with the Philadelphia Eagles. Zach, you have to make sure you are there with Jalen anytime. Jalen should never be by himself on the field. If he is by himself on the field, someone run over and talk him down if they need to. That's what you have to do with Jalen Carter, because he is too valuable. He's too important. He's too big a piece of this team's success for him to jeopardize not only his career, but also the future of any Philadelphia Eagles season. So please, 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 moving forward, Zach, please shadow Jalen, because he could use it. All right. First game was a little clunky. It wasn't helped by the ejection or all the fights or the rain delay and weather delay, I should say. It was just a very clunky game. Eagles did what they needed to do, which was fantastic. They played well enough to win. And I know the game kind of petered out offensively in after the rain delay going into the second half. But I will say this. What the Eagles did do offensively, they did well. And they looked great. They did make one mistake. You have to get the ball to A.J. Brown. I mean, you cannot have an offensive weapon that big and have him running wind sprints for the entire game until like the last 4 minutes of the game. You can't. You lose AJ. You have to get him involved early, if not early and often. AJ Brown is very important to this team's success. And my concern is that this may end up being the last year for AJ Brown being here, because I feel like he's probably not going to get the ball as much as he wants to, even if the Eagles win. Now, is A.J. Brown, in my opinion, going to be a problem if the Eagles win? Absolutely not. But I do believe that he wants to not only contribute to that winning effort, but more importantly, or I should say equally importantly, A.J. Brown probably has some personal goals in mind. He probably feels like he's one of the better receivers ever to come across the National Football League. And he wants to actually have some numbers to be able to prove that. So when he looks back on his career, he can say, yeah, I was one of the best and I proved it. And I think you're going to have to live with that if you have A.J. Brown. And that's not the worst thing in the world, because all A.J. Brown does is produce when called upon. You don't see him fumble a lot. He doesn't drop a lot of passes. He even does a little blocking. A.J. Brown is a big part of any team's success, and you should be happy to have him. Don't worry about if he pouts or if he is a diva. Just get him involved and get him involved early. It would only help the Philadelphia Eagles. I know there's a lot of mouths to feed on this offense. I get it. But make sure that A.J. is one of the mouths that get fed early. Please. It's going to make things so much easier for everyone involved. Trust me on this. Look, I have to say the secondary, the Eagles secondary, it is going to be a work in progress. Boy, oh boy. Look, the cornerbacks are going to be an issue. And they may be an issue all year. Who knows? You know, even my man Quinyon Mitchell, whom I'm a huge Q fan, second year. First round draft pick by the Eagles last year. He looked solid, but even he didn't look like a lockdown corner. He gave up a couple of passes here and there. And let's be fair. If CeeDee Lamb makes a couple of catches, there is a way that Dallas could have won that opening game. They definitely could have won that game. I'm not saying they should have won the game, but they could have won the game. And they could have won it pretty easily, depending on whether or not the Eagles responded, which I'm assuming they would have responded in some way, form, or fashion. But that is to say, all of that is to say, that the secondary is going to be a problem. And it's going to take a while for this defense to come together. But by the end of the season, I think this defense is going to be very, very solid and very formidable. It's just going to take a while for them to come together. You have a lot of young players who are going to be kind of finding their way through excellence, to excellence in this league. And the corner may never truly get solved until next year, but we'll find out if the season goes on. Hopefully, having Jalen Carter on the field will help our secondary quite a bit. Anyway, Cowboys, they looked better than I thought they would. I'm surprised. I have to be absolutely fair. I mean, I thought after the Micah Parsons trade that the Cowboys literally would not be ready to play mentally. And I was completely wrong. They came out there literally ready to play. And they looked good on both sides of the ball. I think the Cowboys are probably still going to be last in the division, although the Giants are kind of making me eat my words a little bit. But I think the Cowboys will probably still be last in the division, but they're going to move the ball a ton. They're going to be an interesting team to watch. Yeah. So, let's go to, speaking of the Giants, that Giant game against the Washington Commanders. Folks, I watched this game, and you hear a lot about Russell Wilson and Jackson Dart and Brian Daboll. Look, when is Daboll going to put Dart in? I'm telling you, folks, the vast majority of the reaction that I've heard is that Russell Wilson stinks. He's washed up. Looked how bad he played last year. He's no good this year. He was skittish in the pocket against Washington. Folks, listen, you have to be fair about this. The Giant lack of offense this past Sunday had very little to do with Russell Wilson. Russell was running for his life. He looked like Pat Mahomes in the Super Bowl when they played Tampa Bay. I mean, Russell really did not have time to do much of anything. So I think it's a little premature to be down on Russell Wilson, even though I think a lot of the Giant fan base is. I'm telling you this. If you want to be down on Russell Wilson and you're dying to see Jackson Dart in the lineup, get ready to look at the reincarnation of who's the kid? David Carr, who played for the Texans, number one pick for the Houston Texans. Jackson Dart is going to get killed behind this Giants offensive line. And I know the left tackle was out. I get that. But I'm not sure how much one offensive lineman is going to help the entire line. Giants looked like they had no real offensive weapons. It was a tough watch. And look, that Giant defense, which I thought was going to be pretty good this year, really was spotty most of the day. I think Washington made more mistakes than the Giants caused mistakes from Washington. It will be interesting to see what that Giant team looks like against the Cowboys, I believe, is their next opponent. It'll be interesting to see what they look like against the Cowboys for both teams. It wasn't as good a watch as the Jets-Steelers game, but it was an interesting watch for the NFC East division. So I was glad to get a look at both teams. It was fun. Obviously, I watched the Green Bay-Detroit game, and folks, I got to tell you, Green Bay looks like they are going to be for real. Green Bay is, if they ever, ever get comfortable with, if they ever get their injuries under control, Jordan Love looks very comfortable back there right now. And I think they're going to be a very formidable team. As I told you before the season started, I picked Green Bay to win the NFC North, and I'm also picking them to face the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. The Packers have a chance to be very, very good this year. And if you're Detroit, I have to tell you, it was a tough, tough day. And it's not what you're looking for out of that team. Now, it's week one. I believe they will bounce back, especially playing the Bears this coming week. But it was not a good showing for Detroit. And if you're Dan Campbell, you can't be happy by what you saw out there from your team execution-wise. They have to find a way to get back to being themselves. Even if they don't win 15 games this year, they are a better team, in my opinion, than what they showed this past Sunday. And they have to find a way to get back to that. It'll be interesting to see how things roll along for the Detroit Lions. They have a little bit of pressure on them this year. And I don't think Green Bay or Minnesota is going to make it any easier for the Lions to do what they need to do if they hope to get to where they want to be. Okay, this game absolutely was the best game of the night, obviously. Baltimore, Buffalo. Boy, what a game. I'm telling you, folks, I stayed awake for that entire game. I watched that entire game, and, you know, what a great win for the Buffalo Bills. I got to tell you, when Keon Clark caught that tipped touchdown in the fourth quarter, that's when you being me, really started to worry about whether or not Baltimore could win the game. This is when you first thought, okay, Baltimore really could be in trouble here, because Baltimore dominated the game. It should not have even been close, but they never put it away. And Buffalo kept hanging around until they eventually put themselves in the position with the Keon Cole tipped touchdown reception to actually be within one score again. And this time they capitalized. I mean, look, we all know that Derrick Henry, who looked phenomenal in the game, by the way, we all know that Derrick Henry cannot fumble the ball when he did in the fourth quarter. We get that. And that Baltimore defense, little friendly word of advice, please don't talk to me anymore about the greatness of the Baltimore Ravens defense until further notice, please. All right? They were underwhelming throughout that entire second half. So let me just put it like that. But to me, and I'm going to be absolutely honest here, the blame for that Baltimore loss, and you cannot lose that game under any circumstances. You just can't. But the blame for that loss goes squarely on the shoulders of Coach John Harbaugh. Coach, look, John Harbaugh always says the right things when it comes to Lamar Jackson. Lamar's our leader. Lamar is special. Lamar is this. Lamar is that. He always says all the right things, right? But whenever he has the opportunity to let Lamar close out a game, he gets conservative, and he takes the ball out of Lamar's hands. Folks, Lamar played a brilliant game Sunday night. He was absolutely fantastic. How on earth, when you're watching Josh Allen do what he does, how on earth, if you're John Harbaugh, do you not let Lamar take the game into his hands to lock up the win? How? I mean, again, I just told you he played a brilliant game. He ran. He threw. He was unbelievable. He took care of the football. They had some of the most conservative plays you ever want to see the last two series, the last two possessions, they had the ball. And if you're Baltimore, and if you're trying to win a Super Bowl, you have to actually make sure you close out a game, right? And how do you close out a game? You put the ball in the hands of your best player, and you tell him, go win this for us, big guy. That's what you do. And that big guy is Lamar Jackson. Now, look, I don't know if John Harbaugh is either trying to protect Lamar from criticism from the press. That's why he doesn't let him you know, go for it on fourth down or do some of the things that they need with more aggressive play calling, that would be a problem if he was trying to protect Lamar in the fourth quarter of a game that they have to win. But maybe Coach Harbaugh doesn't believe Lamar is capable of putting the game away. And that would be an even bigger problem. Folks, there is no circumstance under which any coach and quarterback combination would take the ball out of their quarterback's hands when you're trying to hold on to a lead, right? It wouldn't happen with Reed and Mahomes. It wouldn't happen with Taylor and Burrow. It wouldn't happen with McVay and Stafford. It wouldn't even happen with Sirianni and Hurts. Sirianni put the ball in Jalen Hurts' hands on Thursday to close out the game and let Jalen decide the best way to actually run out that clock. You have to trust Lamar a little bit. Now, look, let's be fair. I've been up and down on Coach Harbaugh. He's been a great coach, and he is a great coach. And he's had a wonderful tenure in Baltimore. But I think he has as big a hand in some of these Baltimore playoff losses as Lamar or anyone else does. He just has to find a way to allow Lamar to win or lose the game. You have to be able to live with that, right? So, you know, when you have a fourth and three and Buffalo's, you know, running up and down the field every time they get the ball back from you, you have to actually go for it and trust your quarterback to actually get that first down so that you can run out the clock. This was an overreaction by me. I'll be the first one to admit. But I kind of feel that way about John Harbaugh. As good a coach as he is, and he is a great coach, sometimes I question his decision-making and his approach to games. I mean, who else would lose a game like this other than the Baltimore Ravens? I mean, this kind of loss has Baltimore Ravens written all over it. For some reason, every time they take two steps forward, they love to take a step and a half back. It's absolutely amazing. You dominate the game after suffering a heartbreaking loss in the divisional round of the AFC postseason game in order to go to the AFC championship game. And your first statement, you dominate the game and you lose on the last second by a Matt Prater field goal, who literally just got off the plane 30 minutes into the game. I mean, that's what you do. That's Baltimore. That's Baltimore for you. That being said, I still think Baltimore is going to represent the AFC in this year's Super Bowl. But boy, oh boy, do they make it tough. They make it so tough on you. And speaking of tough, let's talk a little bit about Josh Allen. Boy, oh boy, Josh Allen. I'm telling you right now, Josh Allen was absolutely phenomenal in that game Sunday. He's been phenomenal for the last year and a half or so. He's always been a good player. Always, always, always. But the last year and a half, he's been spectacular. And it is interesting. I have to be absolutely honest. I said this last season, but I'm going to read it to you again. I honestly thought Lamar Jackson should have won the MVP last season over Josh Allen. I'm just going to read the numbers for you, and you tell me if you disagree. Look, Lamar's numbers, he was 12-5 for the season. He had 67% completions, 4,172 yards, 41 throwing touchdowns against four interceptions, 120 quarterback rating, 915 rushing yards, and four rushing TDs. Josh Allen, he was 13-4, 64% completion percentage, 3,731 yards, 28 passing TDs, 6 interceptions, a 75 quarterback rating, and 531 rushing yards against 12 rushing TDs. Folks, Lamar had a better season Let's just be honest about that. But the reason Josh Allen won the MVP last season is what you saw on Sunday. He was so integral to his team winning game after game after game. I mean, it is very difficult to quantify the effect that Josh Allen has on the outcome of his team's games. And that's why he won the MVP last year. I can't quibble about him being named the MVP. It was that close in my mind between Lamar and Josh Allen. But Josh just finds a way to win these games. And boy, oh boy, is he a talent. I'm telling you, it's really, really hard to believe. And we know why. But it's very, very difficult. When you watch Josh Allen play, especially since he's been taking care of the ball the last year and a half, when you watch Josh Allen play, it's so hard to believe he's never been to a Super Bowl. It is unbelievable. I did a little digging. Looked at his postseason history. Josh obviously has been in the playoffs 6 times. I think this is his 8th year. This is his 8th season. He's been in the playoffs 6 times. Lost in overtime to Deshaun Watson. He lost to Joe Burrow the year the Cincinnati Bengals went to the Super Bowl. And the other 4 times he lost to Mahomes. Folks, if you're Josh Allen, you have to be literally driven to madness with Patrick Mahomes. You have to hope, if you're Josh Allen, you have to hope Kansas City finds a way to meet you in the playoffs, because this year, you can actually beat them. You can actually beat them. But it's weird. Even though I picked Kansas City for the AFC Championship game, and it's only one game, week one of the NFL season, Kansas City is going to struggle to get back to the AFC Championship game. But if you're Josh Allen, you got to hope and pray that you face Patrick Mahomes one more time in the playoffs. Because this year, I think you can beat him. And we'll see if he gets that satisfaction. Now, if Josh Allen gets to the Super Bowl without going through Patrick Mahomes, I'm sure he'll be just fine with that as well. But I think he really, really, really wants to beat Mahomes in the playoffs to get to a Super Bowl, whether that's in the divisional round or the AFC Championship game. And he may or may not get his wish. But boy, oh boy, did Josh Allen look good. He looked so good. He was, to me, he was the best player of the week, including Aaron Rodgers and J.J. McCarthy. So there's that. Speaking of J.J. McCarthy, folks, the Monday night game was fascinating in so many different ways. Look, let's start with J.J. McCarthy. He was as good as you can be in the fourth quarter. To me, he did not look horrible the first 3 quarters. He just looked like a rookie in his first NFL game, to me. But what he did in the fourth quarter, I mean, if he never does anything else in his career, and I think he will, but if he never does anything else in his career, he can hang his hat on that. The fact that he was able to bounce back the way he did on the road in Chicago, even though they're missing some defensive players on the Bears, and come back to win that game for his team. Boy, oh boy, his confidence has to be through the roof. Now, let's see what he looks like this week. I don't know who the Vikings play this week coming up, but it'll be interesting to see how JJ develops. But this may be just the boost that he needs to actually sail into his second season, first season as a starter, and get that team, the Minnesota Vikings, right back where they left off last season. It'll be interesting to watch him and see how it goes. Then you have the other side of the ball. Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears. Folks, I have to tell you, I want to read you some information about Caleb, right? Caleb, the Bears had a 17-6 lead going into the fourth quarter. And Caleb Williams' stats for the second half of the game, He was 8 for 19 for 98 yards, one touchdown, and two sacks. Folks, that's just not good enough. It's not. And look, it was the kind of more the same that we've been seeing from Caleb Williams all last year. He's up and he's down. He's up and he's down. There's kind of a roller coaster to his game, which really is not helpful in the larger scheme of things. You want someone who is consistent. And Caleb has yet to find the consistency gene in his quarterback play in the NFL. He is not without talent, but he misses too many throws. He misses too many reads to make up for all the good things that he does. And when I say all the good things that he does, all is not enough, because he doesn't do enough good things often enough. So he's got to find a way to tap into whatever it is inside of him that's going to help him be like J.J. McCarthy was, a second-year player in his first NFL start, in his first NFL real game, who bounced back on the road and scored three touchdowns in the fourth quarter of his first game starting. You know, Caleb, if you're Caleb Williams, you're watching that, you had to be like, really? I got to be able to do some of that. And more importantly, if you're Ben Johnson and you're watching that, you got to be like, really? You got to do some of that. Look, the Bears' next three games, they are going into Detroit to face the Lions. And then they got the Cowboys at home and the Raiders on the road in Las Vegas. I got to tell you, if you think Ben Johnson wants to go into Detroit and get embarrassed by his old team, the Lions, who some way find their mojo this week and really put it on a Chicago Bear team that's marginal possibly, that is the last thing he wants to have happen. And so I'm sure he's going to be driving his troops hard. The bye for Chicago is in week 5. And I'm telling you right now, Caleb Williams is on the clock, for better or worse. Ben Johnson is not going to want to start his coaching career going 2-15. All right? He's not going to want to do that. He may not have a choice, but I can tell you this. If it's behind... If he goes 2-15 with Caleb Williams as the starting quarterback, I'm going to be shocked. If he goes 2-15, he's going to go 2-15, and Caleb Williams is not going to be the starting quarterback in Chicago. Ben Johnson will use any capital he has, and he's got a lot in this first season of his, to make the change at quarterback. Who knows? Tyson Bagent may end up being Tony Romo, because I'm telling you right now, Ben Johnson is not going to go 2-15. 4-13, 5-12. He's not going to do that with Caleb Williams starting the entire 17-game season. He will make a change because he's going to need to see something consistent out of Caleb. And if they have that kind of record, chances are you're going to see last year's Caleb Williams. And that is the picture of inconsistency. Now, as I said before, it's not like Caleb is not without talent. I just think he probably is going to end up taking the same route that someone like Baker Mayfield took. He may have to leave Chicago in order to show us what he can really do in the NFL. He has an enormous amount of pressure on his shoulders, now even more so after the Monday night game. But that comes with being the number one overall pick in the draft. Every other number one pick in the history of the NFL have had that same pressure, if not more. And the only way to relieve that pressure is to play better. And that's what Caleb has to do. He either will or he won't. And if he doesn't, he's going to be out of there. He may not be traded right away or cut, but he won't be on the starting lineup. I can promise you that. Ben Johnson is not going to go down with the ship on this. He's going to make sure that he throws Caleb to the Sharks before the Sharks get to him. Trust me. But he may have to go to another team to find success. He just doesn't look settled. He never looks comfortable. And that's the thing about Caleb Williams. So it'll be interesting to see how things go for the Bears. They are going to be a soap opera all season long. And again, this NFC North, it is going to be a roller coaster. I still believe that the AFC North is the best division in football, but the NFC North is right behind it, and it is going to be fascinating to watch. It's going to be so much fun. Folks, I had a suggestion. I heard and want to offer congratulations to all the latest members of the Basketball Hall of Fame. I'm sorry, the Naismith Hall of Fame. Carmelo, Dwight Howard, Dream Teams et al. But to me, the Basketball Hall of Fame, obviously, is the least well-regarded of all the major sports halls of fame. Obviously, it doesn't hold a candle in the NFL Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame, or the Baseball Hall of Fame. And we all know that the difference between basketball and the other sports is that basketball doesn't have a Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. It is basketball in general, international, high school, women, college, pro. Anyone who has distinguished themselves in the game of basketball is eligible to be nominated to and elected to the Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame. So, look, I know they make their announcements of their class during the Final Four because they like to encourage the fact that the Basketball Hall of Fame is inclusive of basketball at every level. But I think that's a mistake. Folks, they're never going to be the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. Fine. But what should you do? Use the All-Star Weekend that the NBA has every year and make that the announcement of your next Hall of Fame class for their induction. You can still have the induction when you do it, but get rid of the All-Star Game. It's a problem. It's been a problem for decades. It's not worth playing. And you can lead on this, NBA, because you know, the Pro Bowl is the same deal in football. And the baseball All-Star game is going the same way of the dinosaurs as far as these All-Star exhibition games are concerned. Get rid of the game. If you want to keep the three-point shooting contest, great. If you want to do a dunk contest when you have enough people who are NBA players who want to compete for the dunk contest, do it. But dunk contest doesn't have to be every year. Instead, introduce your Hall of Famers. Do the three-point contest and have some kind of high school game, like a McDonald's All-Star game. Or you can do the ABCD or some AAU league All-Star game, right? Because there are so many high schoolers anyway who are coming into the NBA. Give us a chance to see them on a national platform so that we can actually kind of get to know some of these players who may or may not go to college. Get to know some of these players because they're going to be in the league anyway. And they, these high schoolers, these All-Americans, they will compete because they want to show everybody and their mother what they can do before they reach the NBA. Folks, I'm telling you, I think that's the way to go if you're the NBA. I think that's the way to go if you're even McDonald's All-American. Again, it doesn't have to be McDonald's All-American. Just do some kind of high school All-Star competition game. Here's another idea. If you want to do American high school stars versus international high school stars, that actually might be a really fun watch because there's so many international players that play in and come to the NBA every season. It'll give us a chance to get to know them as well. So, NBA, if you're listening, please scrap the All-Star game. Get these high school kids involved. Give us something to watch, and we can honor the next class of Hall of Fame inductees at the same time. Think about it. All right, folks, that is the show for tonight. My name is Cyrus Farmer. This is the Stomp the Tea podcast. I want to thank you for watching. I want to thank you for listening. And as always, we will see you on the first tee.